Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langsam. Now, Ian, I'm afraid, is out this week because he needs to rewrite his keynote speech for the annual Bishop's Itchington Donkey Festival. But in his place is, of course, who else? CNET.com's Andy Hoyle.
Hello. God, I wish I was doing what Ian is doing.
Well, I don't think you do, because it was either the Donkey Festival or having a nasty nipple piercing infection cleaned up. And I decided to go with the Donkey Festival as this week's excuse.
I would attend that Donkey Festival.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
It sounds like it'd be a good time.
It is. Well, we're going to have a very good time on this episode. I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row in a way that you have joined us, because last week we recorded an extra message live, which is out on the feed for patrons. And this week you're on the show proper. So thanks for stepping in.
Yeah. Both recorded from my studio.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's get on with some news, because later on we're going to talk about how YouTube's algorithm is a bit of a pain when it comes to running a part of a business on YouTube, but more on that soon. The Guardian wrote this week that Spotify removed the shuffle button from album pages after the UK's most popular but least interesting middle-of-the-road singer Adele commented that the order tracks were placed in were supposed to tell a story. The newspaper said Adele thanked the streaming service after it made less straightforward for users the ability to listen to songs in a random order. She tweeted, "We don't create albums with so much care and thought into our track listing for no reason. Our art tells a story, and our stories should be listened to as we intended. Thank you, Spotify, for listening." And Spotify replied, "Anything for you." Now, the move echoes Taylor Swift's on-again, off-again relationship with streaming services, such as in 2014, when she pulled her music from Spotify after bemoaning that artists weren't getting enough royalty payments for each song of theirs that was played. She reinstated the catalogue 3 years later. Or then there was the time she attacked Apple Music for not paying artists during its complimentary three-month trials, provoking the company to change its policy and her subsequently making her albums, 1989, I think, in particular, available on Apple Music. Now, all of these sorts of moves, Andy, show, I think, how popular artists, not just their powerful parent labels, have the star power to force real change in the business of music streaming. And it's not confined to artists like the aforementioned Miss Swift having some kind of home country advantage over American giants like Apple, with Adele's pressure resonating globally from the UK. But it's also a great example, I think, of change generally coming from pressure only at the very top. For instance, would one of my favourite bands, Cannibal Corpse, get the ear of Spotify executives in the same way? I suspect not. Now, Adele says her albums tell stories that should be heard in order, but so too does the work of death metal's finest. The only difference, I think, is that while Adele's stories bang on about divorce, Cannibal Corpse's are more focused on killing the undead with hammers or chainsaws. But at least my favourite band's poetry, as woven into classics like Hammer Smashed Face or The Cryptic Stench, can now be heard in the order that band intended as a result of Adele's effort to maintain the streaming integrity of songs like My Little Love, or maybe To Be Loved, or Love Is a Game, or any other examples of the creativity on her latest album.
Andy, so we get it. You're not a fan of Adele.
I'm not a fan of Adele, and I'm not a fan of these sorts of massive changes coming from top-tier people.
Why?
Because I feel they're a bit self-serving. Do you not?
No, not necessarily. I think Adele is right in her point about that, you know, these albums are they're written in a certain way, and maybe that is that it's telling a story if it's a bit more of a concept album where there is a narrative that kind of takes you through that, and that the user should be encouraged to try and experience it that way first, and maybe it's even just as simple as those bands that kind of put like interlinking bits between songs so they all kind of flow together, and you know, suddenly listening to them in out of order puts it in a weird way. I think that fundamentally should eventually come down to user choice. So as long as it is still possible to use the shuffle button, because I listen to albums on shuffle, I listen to just an artist on shuffle so that I just get a mix of their stuff, as long as that is still possible, I think it is a nice idea to encourage the artist's way of doing it first. I don't think it's necessarily self-serving. It's not encouraging people to listen to her music over any others.
No, true.
And I think these changes come to these services when these bigger artists speak up, as you mentioned with Taylor Swift. And I know this is a different issue, but it is these artists who are big enough deals that they are the ones that can help make changes to the platform and to how you know, users will interact with their music, and to how artists are remunerated as a result.
I agree with you on that. I agree with what Taylor Swift did. I think that was a good move. I just feel that it's a bit self-righteous to, you know, force through the killing of
feature. You said self-righteous now, but before you said self-serving.
Well, it's a bit of
and
both.
I was going to question, how would it be self-serving?
Well, I think in this instance, and don't get me wrong, I'm not here to not have my opinion changed. This is first reaction stuff. Mm. I sort of feel like it was always possible to play an album straight through the first time, and it wasn't possible to do it. And it's still possible to play an album on shuffle. And if this was such an issue, why do it when your new album just came out? Because it's you know, it's another way of getting some attention.
It's possible.
That's maybe why I think it's self-serving.
Or it's possible that it's just one that it's just something that hasn't really occurred to her,
because she's never had hits on Spotify before. I just don't buy it. I just think. That's why I feel like it's self-serving, and I don't feel like
it could have occurred to her for a number of reasons. Maybe this particular album, you know, there is a particular narrative that in previous albums, maybe for as far as she's concerned, it's been basically a collection of 12 songs, whereas this time it's much more of a story that starts on track one and goes through to track 12, and maybe it's kind of just hasn't occurred to her that almost the default way, you know, that you can listen to albums on Spotify is to just jumble it all up. And maybe she spent, you know, half of the writing of the album was really figuring out how this narrative plays out. So maybe that's why with this one in particular, she suddenly decided this is something that she's going to bring up as an issue. So I don't necessarily, I think it's quite cynical to think that it's just to try and get more promo for her album. I think there could be some very legitimate reasons why it's suddenly seemed like more of a problem, and I can understand how that could be the case now. So I'm simply playing devil's advocate on behalf of Adele here, and I also totally get why that is an issue for artists. And you know, if you are a chef and you've made this beautiful, you know, 5-course meal, and each one is done a different way, and someone just comes in and is like, just starts grabbing handfuls of dessert and stuffing it in their face, and then grabs some of the starter and puts that in, and then throws the wine all over the main course and just has it all in whatever the hell order they want. It's not quite. It's not experiencing it in the way that it's supposed to be.
And I don't feel I disagree with that. Because that's not really what's happening here. This is about telling people how they should listen to something by artificially restricting the ways in which they can do it. You know, if you put a CD in a CD player, you can put CDs on shuffle. You know, you can play them in random orders. You can still play things on shuffle. This is about removing the ease of doing something that you can still do. And I just think that is not the kind of way for innovation to come about, in my opinion.
So I think it seems that we are on the same side, but I think the problem then is maybe how Spotify has implemented this, in that simply making it more difficult is not the way, but what it could do instead is maybe encourage you in another way, maybe even literally just sort of put up a messaging of some kind when you put it on shuffle or something, so it's not so much what's happened, but the way that they're doing it that you are taking issue with.
Yeah, I think that would be good, because albums have a lot of detail on their pages. They have things like, the streaming quality. They have whether it's a live album, obviously that differs from artist to artist, but there are visual clues as to the nature of a release, and I don't necessarily think that it should be any different for something like this. If you want to be able to put up and say, oh, this is a, you know, it's a gapless album and should be heard from start to finish, for instance, then put that on there. As you say, I think that would be a very interesting idea. I think that could work quite well.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. But so maybe this isn't necessarily the way, because I think not every album is one long narrative that comes. Some is, and I don't mean this in any disrespect to any artist, but some albums are just a collection of songs. They've got 12 songs that they really like and they've recorded, and they're like, okay, well, in what order are we going to put them in? And maybe that artist's maybe that those song listings get changed around for any number of reasons, and it doesn't really make any difference, in which case just putting it on shuffle is fine. So I think it's maybe something that maybe an artist themselves, when they put it on Spotify, maybe there could be a little box that's like, this should be listened to in this order. And then maybe it would when you go to hit that button, it maybe gives you that little bit of information of, this is, this is how the artist thinks it's best. And then at least you've got that information and you can go, yeah, that's fine. Or you can go, well, to hell with the artist, because I don't really give two craps what Adele thinks. So I'm going to do something else.
And John in the live chat says, how hard is it to have two buttons, one saying default order and one saying shuffle? I quite like that idea. And it's basically an extension of another way of putting what you suggested, Andy. But I quite like that idea as a way. I just for me, it just irked me, the timing of this coming right alongside a hotly anticipated new album, and the fact that it's just about artificially making something harder rather than giving users a choice, which is what I think you guys are suggesting could be done better. But there we go. Much respect nonetheless for selling tens of millions of great albums that people enjoy, I suppose, just not me. If you have any views on this, then you can send them to us by emailing hello@uktechshow.com. Andy, do you know how many light bulbs you have in your house?
I have never stopped to consider it. I reckon 60.
60 light bulbs?
Yeah, probably.
That's an awful lot, although I think I've probably got about that many.
I've got a big crystal chandelier in my living room, and that's got 20 on
it
alone.
That counts as one. That counts as
right,
one.
So light fittings. You said light bulbs.
Yeah, that's true. I did. I could have been clearer, and I regret that. I apologize. The reason I ask, though, Andy, is because I now have significantly more light bulbs in my house than I did this time last week. And
bulbs or fittings, Nate?
Very good, bulbs.
Yeah. Right. I
want to talk about this because there wasn't a lot in the primary news that I thought would interest Andy and I to talk about. But I did talk to Andy just before we start the show about how I have bought quite a lot of smart light bulbs and have been running something of an experiment in my house to find out how useful and cool are smart light bulbs and, by extension, no pun intended, smart plug sockets. Turns out both are excellent. Now, you, before we started recording, and when I say we were talking about this ahead of the show, we planned to talk about this since I started writing the script. But before the show, Andy had some questions and I had the answers, but then he told me not to answer the questions so he could ask them on the main show. So, Andy, what were you going to ask me before
well,
I continue?
Well, it was more that you were about to give an explanation to me in advance of what it is you've done. And I said, no, I don't want to hear it. I want you to do it on the show. Because when we first talked about this, because we always talk about tech off podcast, you know, but it's still the thing we talk about. And we were sort of chatting and you were saying that you really wanted to do like an experiment with smart light bulbs and you wanted to just like give it a little try, almost like dipping your toe in the water and seeing what it's like. And I remember thinking at the time, fine, but you don't do experiments, you don't do a test, so I didn't expect you would to go and buy maybe two smart light bulbs, put them in a lamp and see what they're like. I fully expected that because you have no inability to find a happy medium, you would just go balls to the wall with it and you would spend hundreds on smart bulbs. So why don't you tell the class what you've done and whether I was right about
okay, teacher.
You.
Yeah. Although I should say balls to the wall. I have never put my balls on the wall since that incident. So we can keep that out of discussion.
That's probably good.
Yeah.
The repainting was significant.
It was, yes, and expensive. So, and painful. So you are right. I'm not very good at doing things by halves. I have replaced half the light bulbs in the house as part of this experiment. I decided to buy a set of lights from two different brands. One of the brands is called Meros. You may see those promoted around the web. And another one by a company called Nanoleaf. And from Meros, I not only bought some of these light bulbs, but I also bought some smart plug sockets. So many, in fact, that I ended up with one spare. There it is. It's on my desk, just sitting there waiting for a new home. And all of these products support Apple HomeKit. They support the Amazon ecosystem. They support the Google ecosystem as well. So they're very, very flexible in terms of the devices that you can connect them to. They all fundamentally work the same across all of those platforms. We're an Apple household, so we're using HomeKit, but your mileage will probably vary very little from mine on Android or Amazon. The first ones that I bought were coloured bulbs, full-size bulbs. I don't know what the code are for the fittings, but some of them have the little bayonet things where it's like two little spikes on either side, and some of them have the screw fitting as well. And I initially started by putting... We have three lamps in our main living room, three large lamps. I put one in each of those, and then I put another one in one of the ceiling-based lights that we actually don't use very often because it's controlled by a switch on the very far end of the room and it's just a pain in the ass to turn it on. So we put one in there as well. I then also attached a smart plug socket to the lamp in my bedroom because I wanted to experiment with using sort of a basic on-off control rather than having the light bulb itself. I attached one to the lamp on the side of the bed that I sleep on and another one on the lamp on Kate's side of the bed as well. I also, in my studio where I'm recording now, I have quite a large number of studio lights, about five or six, made by a company called Niwa. And they are what I have on when I'm either doing video conferences or TV from here or my drum videos. And those themselves aren't smart, but I have them all plugged into a dedicated surge protected power strip, which has its own on off switch for everything on the strip. And so normally when I go into the room, I reach behind the drum kit and turn the switch on and all the lights come on, but it still involves that reach around. So I attach one to that as well. And then I've got a spare one. And then finally, I put another smart bulb in the light that is sort of by our front door, because it's like a narrow path that leads down to the door, and at night the light is either on or it's off. So those are
this
all...
This is a thorough description so far, and I already have some I think, pertinent questions.
Okay, well, that's what the experiment was. And I thought I could do one, but why do one when you can do, you know, eight or what have you? So they're all set up, they're all configured, and the setup process is brilliant because you don't need any third-party app to add them to your house. You scan, there's like a little QR code on the side of each product. You hold it up to the iPhone. It says, this is a product. Do you want to add it to Home? You press yes. And then it appears in at the Apple Home app, where you can then press on or off, or if it's a dimmer, like with the bulbs rather than the sockets, you can slide up or down like a dimmer switch. Even if the actual lamp itself doesn't support dimming because it's going through the light bulb, it now can. And you can also change the color on a, you know, a big color wheel. So you get the millions or billions or whatever it is, choices of sure. LED colors. So that's what our setup. And then you can group them as well. I have some of them grouped in the house. Some of them are set to turn off if no one's in the house, which it does by looking at the location of the phones that are connected to the Home app, which is, again, is great. It has meant that when I went out to walk the dog earlier, Kate's out at an art exhibition today, when I left, I hadn't turned the lights off. When I came home, I noticed they were off because I'd set them to turn off when I left the house. So it's little okay. things like that that I find very, very useful.
I would say, other than that, though, the main question I have is how is it actually making a difference to how you are in your home? Because what I know you already had, particularly in your living room, is connected plug sockets which operate on a remote. And so what you have is a physical remote which is just on the side. And when you go into your living room, you press a button and all your lights turn on. So nothing that you've really said seems to have been much of a change for you. You talk about having one in your bedside lamp, but it's your bedside lamp. So how necessary is it to have that be smart?
Okay, let me stop you right there
and touch it
and answer these questions for you. So on the bedroom one in particular, the bedside lamp is basically the opposite corner to when you walk in. So if you want to put the lamp on, the normal process is, if it's dark, you walk in and turn the big light on so you can see where you're going, walk around, turn the lamp on, go back to the main light, turn the main light off. So in this...
So now you stand at the doorway in the dark, get your phone out, turn it on, and then go into the room.
No, because it's all voice controlled. I probably should have mentioned that. You can do all this with your voice. So you can...
Never mention the voice control.
Sorry, okay. should have mentioned that. So all of these you can control by just talking to the Apple Assistant and say, you know, turn these lights on or turn that light on or dim such lights or change the lighting to red or whatever.
Okay, so I can, this has changed everything. Yeah. You should have mentioned this from the first moment.
I thought it was implied. Obviously, it wasn't.
Absolutely not.
So it's about... So yes, it's voice controlled. All of it in every room. I can just say it. I don't have to be in my phone either, because any of the devices in the house that have a microphone, like the HomePods, for instance, they can tell. And the smart cameras that we already had, that we talked about in a previous show, because they can detect movement and they can hear movement, you can also set them to activate if it hears movement in its proximity. So again, even if you didn't speak, you can still do it.
Yeah, and that's good for both convenience and security.
Yeah,
it's the equivalent of having you know, one of those security lights in the front of your house that, you know, lights up when someone walks past to deter burglars, etc.
And the one that I'm particularly excited about, and it's the one that I only installed this morning, so I haven't even had a chance to check it yet, is the light that is by the front door. Because when it's dark, because we live outside of the city, it is pitch black. You basically can't see anything when you're walking down that little corridor, which is really not very pleasant. The way that this is set up is that if you're not home, you can either A, turn that light on manually when you pull up on the driveway, or, as we've got it configured, if no one's home and it is therefore off, when somebody arrives home and it's nighttime, it will turn itself on. So you literally, your presence at the house will enable that light. So it's lots of little things like that that, to me, it felt like the only way of doing an experiment is to do quite a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And
in the chat, Mike says that his partner is disabled and actually having the motion sensors for the bulbs has made their life much easier. And I think that is an amazing use for this tech, because yeah, then you don't have to be reaching for light switches and doing and fumbling about in the dark. It just goes with you, which is great.
Yeah, that's completely true, and that's not something we've had experience of here, but I can only imagine that. I mean, both Andy and I have a disabled person in our family, not who is here, and it's these sorts of things that would probably make his life a whole hell of a lot easier. We should really talk about that, actually.
From a purely aesthetics point of view, the motion tracking is something that, like, I don't even know if it really exists outside of fancy installations at hotels, but I am looking at lighting options in my new house. I have it's quite a nice big staircase that sort of spirals its way down through the floors of the house, and what I really want to do is get lights that basically come that sort of trail down the whole of that stairwell. So as you kind of walk down the stairs, you sort of walk around this light that goes down. But what I'd love to do is, if it's multiple bulbs, have some sort of motion track that it, as you walk down the steps, the bulbs would turn on and kind of follow your, as you walk down the stairs, the lights would move down with you, which could look really cool, particularly maybe not all the time, but at night, if you're getting up to go to, say, the toilet or something, and you're just walking down one flight of stairs, you don't want all the lights in the house to come on. It could just follow your pathway as you're walking. But I don't know if that exists or if it's possible beyond a custom done installation, but that would be really, really cool.
It's definitely possible, but it will probably cost you quite a lot of money to do it without a custom installation. Yeah. And all of these things can be set to automate. We haven't even begun experimenting with the automation over and above some of the simple things like lights turning off when you're not at home or turning on when you get back. Those are all the things I'm really looking forward to. And to answer a question in the chat, Nick asks, does Apple work with the Amazon Assistant? There are apps for all of those, and all the products that I've just mentioned, they all work with those other devices, the Amazon ones. I think maybe the Meros ones, they work with a huge number of them, like Samsung's things. I know they work with smart things. They work with Amazon, they work with Google. It's not just an Apple thing.
Old place, when I lived in North London, I had a Hive thermostat, but I also had a couple of Hive bulbs. And one of them I had in a big, like, sort of standing lamp, which was I'd put next to the next to the living room window, which is the window that was road facing. And I had just that one bulb programmed in so that when I was away, it would automatically come on at a certain time, but also would sort of randomize it a bit. So sometimes it would come on slightly later, so it wasn't too obvious that it was programmed, which was just a really nice extra bit of peace of mind, that because that obviously does completely deter burglars if they, you know, they think that the house is in. So the blinds were closed, but there was light in the room. So that was definitely really, just that one bulb alone was such a big extra bit of peace of mind when I was away from home.
When I told Ian that I had gone down this route of experimentation with smart bulbs, his very first question to me was, did you buy Hue, as in Philips Hue? I said, no, HomeKit stuff only. He said, thank, expletive deleted. I really didn't want to have to yell at you. And the main reason that I didn't buy Hue, or in fact, quite a few of the other ones that are around and very popular, is many of them require a standalone hub to link them all together. The Hive system does work with Apple HomeKit, but you still have to have a hub. And we have Hive as well for our central heating. And that is a thing that only works for Hive. There are others where you need another company's own hub. And I was like, I don't want a hub. It shouldn't need a hub. I only want things that directly connect to HomeKit and don't need a hub. However, what is going to happen whether you have a hub or not is all of these products, they have firmware, they have updates, and it is a very strange world that I'm now living in where my light bulbs need firmware updates and I have to manually install firmware updates to an individual light bulb or plug socket. And although we've only got about 8 or 9 of these products, it's already enough for me to think this will be a bit of a pain in the ass if they release a software update and they all say, we now want an update, and I have to just go and update all of these bulbs. That's just not going to be a fun experience.
I mean, that's surely something that just happens in the background. That should be how it works, so it just updates.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the updates seem to be relatively straightforward to install, but certainly on some of these bulbs, they appear to install via Bluetooth from the phone rather than directly over Wi-Fi, which I found out by moving away from one when it was doing an update and it disconnected. So
I'd like to know, there's a friend that both me, of mine and yours, and Ian's, actually, and he has got... It's in the hundreds of Philips Hue products, all through his house, every single room of the house, all in his kitchen. I think he's got 20 odd spotlights. Every single one is Philips Hue. He's got those strip LEDs all under every single counter, inside every cupboard. He's got floor lighting, all of which is Hue. All into the garden and the driveway is all Hue. I would love to know in total how much he's spent, because it must be thousands.
I know who you're talking about, and I'm very interested to know how much he spent.
Yeah, because... I mean, maybe it's worth as an extra message, like getting in touch and saying, "Hey, come and talk about it," because his story about all of it would actually be genuinely really interesting. But yeah, I've not seen it, but yeah, I know that he's gone all in. He just went with one manufacturer so that at least then everything is going to work with each other. There's no compatibility issues between different brands that you've got in your bedroom than in your kitchen. It's just all one brand throughout everything.
Well, if anyone listening here, patrons, would like to hear an extra message about that, I would personally love to hear that. So I'll drop him a message when we're done and do it anyway. But it would be even nicer if you actually wanted it and then let me know, because it makes it a little less. What's the word? It's just better. Now, there are a couple of things I wanted to just mention before we move on. When we mentioned that we were talking about this in our live chat, Charlotte, listening live, said that she loves her smart light socket. She has one on her kettle so she can boil water for tea quickly between work calls. Absolutely life-changing. I haven't made a decision about the kettle boiling situation for two reasons. One, I just bought a new kettle, which was an impulse buy when actually Andy and I were in a restaurant with a friend of ours who has a kettle where it has buttons on the front and you press the button based on the drink you're boiling for, because not all drinks need to be boiled. Coffee, for instance, at 90 to 95 degrees, tea at 100 and so on. So I just got that and I can't really justify replacing that. But also, if there's no water in the kettle, then there's no point putting the boil on. So until there is a system where it boils the water for you and puts water in if there isn't any already in there, then I don't think I'm going to be doing
also,
that.
Also, putting loads of water in the morning is quite inefficient, and also means then re-boiling water throughout the day, which will lower its quality, particularly for coffee.
Yeah, definitely. But what I am interested in next, as another impulse buy, is a coffee bean grinding machine that I can activate remotely, because that would be very handy, because I grind beans every other day and it's always a bit of an inconvenience, because it's always when I'm working and I have to factor in the getting the beans out and grinding the beans and then clearing up and then putting the bean bag away and all that sort of stuff. It would actually save me a bit of time in the day. So that would be good. Charlotte says, you just put a mug's worth of water in and fill it up when you pour it, presumably when you pour the last one. So that would actually make sense. But Charlotte's much smarter than me when it comes to kettles, without question. So that will do, I think. I'd love to hear how other people have done with this. Feel free to send us a message, hello@uktechshow.com. We're getting some good feedback in the live chat about doing an extra message with Andy and I's mutual friend. So I will be messaging them after the recording and seeing if we can do that for next week or the week after. And I think with that, Andy, there's nothing else to add. It's time to switch to something else. I'd like to take just a quick moment to thank our patrons for supporting us directly, such as Andrea, not sure which, who recently joined us, and thank you for doing so. And if you are a patron, this is your extended ad-free version of the show with what's shaping up to be some quality outtakes at the end, and you're about to hear this week's third discussion story. If you're not a patron yet, but have been enjoying Text Message for just the price of buying us a coffee or two a month, something like that, you could get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen and chat with us as we record live, and get our Patreon-exclusive show, Extra Message, every week. You'll be supporting me and Ian and getting a lot more of what we do. You can find out more at patreon.com/UKTech. Now, normally it's at this part of the show that we tell you about the wider things happening in the tech world, with Tom Merritt or Sarah Lane, but they had their American Thanksgiving, so they're too full of turkey. But you can rest assured that other stuff in the tech world did happen, and you can keep listening to DTNS for those things. And instead, you listen to us today, which is lovely of you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to Andy. Do you want to give another plug to where people can find your stuff?
Yes. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram with @BatteryHQ, which is a handy way of seeing some of my stuff. And of course, if you are interested in tech, then CNET is where I publish professionally and is a good resource for tech and other things.
Certainly was when I worked there. Certainly seems to be still with you working there. Who else works there?
That's some good insight, Nate. Yeah. That's why people are tuning in.
Well, it's why we're...
Also,
we're...
Ian worked there.
Ian also did work there, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Loads of people do. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next week once Ian is back from dealing with what I can only assume is going to be a fantastic donkey festival.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.